Welcome to the Apprentice Approach Podcast, Episode 20, where the ripples far exceed the splash. This is your host, Jack McQueenie. Many Christians struggle with making disciples. They feel busy, overwhelmed, and not qualified. We understand the struggle, which is why we've created a Bible-based framework so any believer can master the art of disciple-making. In today's episode, we're continuing our conversation with Terry Cook, author, speaker, business leader, blogger, and authority on leadership. If you missed our last episode, I want to encourage you to go back and listen to it. Terry shared one of the biggest keys to leadership, the leadership people want to follow, so you won't want to miss it. Terry is a thought leader for LDN Global and has been influential in challenging our own leaders here at Glen Eyrie and Eagle Lake camps to rethink their thinking about leadership. Let's get back into the conversation. Well, I'm going to shift gears a little bit, Terry. And, you know, we've talked about this. You've been up to speed on the apprentice approach and this platform that we're building and developing. And in disciple making, especially in ministries, we talk about leaders and leading and why this model is so important for disciple makers, and whether they're full-time or not, that's not important. But talk to us about leadership in the context of a disciple-making movement, especially as you see generations occur, because you touched on that organizationally. In the past, we've struggled with it. We've had some great successes, and we assumed. We all know what happens when you assume. And so, but talk to us about that. How can we, as we think about, our trying to help our disciples become a disciple maker and the third to fourth generation, how can we lead them in a way to ensure some of those things that we'd like to see happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that one of the things I would suggest is that we need to think in terms of a dual track. You know, for years and decades, actually, you know, the Navigators have focused, and rightly so, and I'm so thankful through my 50 years with the Navigators of learning how to be a disciple and how to make disciples. And that's one track. But I think the other track is the leadership track. Mm-hmm. That there's discipleship and there's leadership. We tell leaders that you can't live and lead like Jesus if you're not a shepherd leader that he was. But you can't lead like Jesus if you're not living like Jesus. That's the discipleship part of it. But also, because you're working with people, that's the leadership side. And so I think, as we said earlier, that with the strong emphasis on this one track of discipleship, we just assume that the second track of leadership would just naturally fall into place, and it hasn't. And so I think the time and attention, the discipline of learning what practical leadership is all about has to be emphasized to the same degree that the discipleship track needs to be emphasized.
That is a great observation. So tell us, you live with one foot in both of these worlds, and you do a great job at it. How do you tangibly do that? What does that look like for you?
Well, first and foremost, I have to remember that I am a disciple of Christ. Mm-hmm. That whether even though I'm a leader, developer, first and foremost, I am a disciple of Christ. So even this evening, coming over from the airport, just riding in the cab, had the opportunity to share my testimony, you know, with the cab driver. Why? Because that's where Jesus is. Jesus, if you want to be with Jesus, he's out where the gospel is. And so I think practically we never separate those two, you know, leadership and discipleship. That, as I mentioned, first and foremost, we're disciples. And so we should always be looking for those opportunities. Someone asked me years ago specifically on this question, and I said, well, as a leader developer, I also think of the triple A. You know, you think of the AAA Association. And that is a non-Christian, a young Christian, and an older Christian. That even as a leader developer, I'm always looking for, is there at least one non-Christian that I'm involved with? Mm. Is there one young Christian that I'm helping to learn how to fall in love with Jesus through the basics of discipleship? And is there a bit of an older Christian that I'm helping to equip to become a disciple maker? And I don't do all three of those necessarily at the same time, but I'm always trying to stay in the mix mm-hmm. of that. So that I don't get so bogged down in just working with Christian leaders or even uh-huh. non-Christian leaders that I end up forgetting this other key aspect of who I am.
That's great. You've written this little booklet, The Trusted Leader, Three Keys to Becoming the Leader Others Want to Follow. Share some insights from that book and maybe some things that you even learned as a result of writing it.
Yeah. Well, it was a precursor to another book that I'm just finishing, which is a much longer book on our core model, the Lead, Develop, Care model. The ebook, this one you just mentioned, gives a thumbnail sketch. So when I'm working with a leader, you know, rather than going into all the, you know, the three primary responsibilities, the 11 operational aspects, a lot of the tools and exercises that go with those, all those details can be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. We want to keep it simple, but not simplistic. But at the same time, we want them to be able to get a handle on it. So that's why I wrote this ebook. It takes you 15 to 20 minutes to read, and it does just give that thumbnail overview of what the Shepherd model really entails, this framework, what we call a framework for the practice of leadership. I think one of the things that was really intriguing about the process of that, I started with a longer book, and then a colleague of mine suggested the ebook, and he kept saying, "Terry, I love your writing. Cut it in half." And I went from, I started with 80 pages, and he whittled it down to 40, and I sent it to him. He said, "I love this, Terry. This is great. Cut it in half." And interestingly enough, I kept fighting him until I got it down to about half of that. But what it did for me was that it showed me that for a while there, I don't think I really could explain the very essence of this model. And by continuing to trim away, cut this out, cut that out, what is the essence? It really enabled me to get down to the very germ of the heart of this model and why it's so integral for an effective leader to use.
Terry, and all the buzz around coaching these days, tell us about the trends that you're seeing.
Well, that's a good one. It's a bit, perhaps even a bit controversial. I think in Christian coaching in particular, one of the things that I'm personally concerned about is this emphasis on indirect coaching, where, you know, you as a coach do not even need to know anything about the area of leadership that this leader is wanting you to help them with. All you really need to do is ask questions. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. We strongly believe in asking good questions. In fact, we even teach on how do you lead through asking questions. The difficulty, though, that I'm seeing is that the leader that's wanting the help is the one who's determining the agenda. And it's basically a reactive agenda. You know, something happened, the team meeting didn't go well, I haven't been able to recruit a great team, we've got conflict, you know, whatever the case is, can you help me with that? It's often what I call the doc in the box, you know, these emergency care centers that you go to, when you have a sore throat or you've got a rash on your arm and you walk in and the doctor says, "How can I help you?" And you say, "Well, I've got a rash on my arm." And he looks at it and goes, "Yes, that is a rash on your arm. Here's some medicine to take care of it." And that's needed. That's helpful. But that's what I call leadership coaching. We are involved in leader development. And that is we want to shape a different kind of leader. When Jesus said in Matthew 4:19, follow me and I will make you fishers of men, he never asked the disciples, tell me, how would you like for me to develop you? How would you like for me to coach you? He never asked that. He said to them, to those that he wanted to train, what he told them to do was follow me. I know what that looks like, and I've got the agenda to get there. It's what I call direct coaching, or in our work, we call it coaching to the model. And so for us, it's a little bit of a counter to this indirect coaching mindset that I see out there. We want to help shape a leader initially, so that these concepts of the shepherd leader really become a part of who he or she is. That's what we call coaching to the model. And then once those begin to get embedded, then we switch to coaching in the model. Mm. And that is help the other leaders with issues that pop up.
Right.
But we want to help them become a leader and not just help them get through a particular issue.
Yeah, I really like that. You know, the idea behind I will make you fishers of men, Jesus talked about, he didn't ask for any volunteers. He wasn't about, would you volunteer? He called men and women to do that. And I think the other thing for me is, as I think about even the what we're talking about today, the importance of knowing where you're headed. And so, you know, I shared earlier with you the difference between a taxi cab driver versus an airport shuttle driver. The airport shuttle guy knows where he's headed and how long it's going to take and what route they're going to utilize. And so I really do like that model. I think that's really helpful. Well, as you think about, you know, on a personal level, what are some of the things that you can encourage some of our listeners, how they can begin on this journey? So one of the, you know, we want to make this as practical as we can, but how would you, you know, in each some of the stages of your life, how did you go about thinking what I need to do now to get me to the next level, to the next place? How do I need to think? What are some of the resources? Mm-hmm. Who are the people I need to be with?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, when Paul Stanley and Tom Yakeley and I worked on the foundations of this model, you know, we had three requirements for it. The first one was that we wanted it to be biblically grounded, biblically rooted. We wanted it to be culturally relevant. We wanted it to be functionally effective. We wanted it to come from the scriptures. We wanted it to fit anywhere, and it had to work. So my first suggestion would be go back to the scriptures. Hmm. You know, this. You know, we challenge leaders in our seminars on their use of John 13 as the model for leading like Jesus. You know, John 13 is where Jesus washes mm-hmm. the disciples' feet. And they are going back to the scriptures for that. But we would also suggest that that's not the model for what leaders mm-hmm. do. And the reason we say that, and I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but I'll come back to the question. But I think this is important. You know, the reason why we would say that's not the model what leaders are to do if you want to lead like Jesus. Because he told them in the passage there, he says, I leave you an example that you should go and do likewise. Now, this was quite a dramatic scene for the disciples. They were shocked. No rabbi of their day would ever do what Jesus did. In fact, Peter even said, you're not going to wash my feet.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that was so dramatic, so shocking, that they never forgot it. Not only did he command them to do this, but they never forgot it. And yet, nowhere in the rest of the New Testament do you ever see the disciples mm-hmm. washing feet. And you think, in fact, in Acts chapter 6, when they had the opportunity to serve in a way like this by waiting on tables. Their response was, we're not going to do that.
We'll get some guys.
We'll get somebody else to do that. We're not going to do it. Yeah. And initially you think, how did they miss it? They didn't miss it. We miss it. Because John 13, while a great passage, is not the metaphor, not the example of what leaders are to do. It's an example of who leaders are. Leaders have to have that servant heart. First and foremost, do whatever the Father asks them to do. Whether it's washing the disciples' feet or riding into Jerusalem to the accolades of the people who shouted King. To be whatever end of the spectrum you want to, the Father wants you to be on, a leader who has a servant's heart is willing to do that. But it's not the example of what leaders do, because we don't see the disciples ever doing it. The example of what where you want to go into the scriptures is the shepherd model. It's throughout. We call it the dominant leadership model because it's throughout the Old and the New Testament. You know, you take just a few examples. You know, in Psalm 23, you know, David does not say, the Lord is my servant. I shall not want. You know, in John 10, Jesus calls himself not the great servant. He calls himself the great shepherd. First Peter 5, you know, Peter tells the elders to shepherd the flock that God has given you. So the first place to begin looking would be to go back and just look at all the examples of shepherds in the Old and the New Testament. And in particular, trying to answer the questions, what do shepherds do? And not who shepherds are. That's another study. It's a great one. But what shepherds do, to really get at what they should do. The second suggestion would be to take advantage of those that have gone before you. You know, we've got our website, you know, ldnglobal.com, where you get this free ebook. It would be a great little start to begin looking at how do you put this shepherd model together. I would also encourage those that want to grow in this area to look around and find someone who's a bit further down the road, a little bit older, a little bit more mature, who's had the trials and tribulations of life, and they still love Jesus and still love each other, and meet with them and begin asking them some questions about what have they learned about leadership, you know, in leading their family, leading at work, leading in the church, wherever that might be. What are some of the things, and glean from them some of the things that they've learned. I know one of the things, one last illustration, when I was working on Capitol Hill, during the summer, we would have summer interns come up on the Hill. And one of the things that the chaplain of the Senate asked me to do would be to take a group of these incoming, what we call Senate staffers, and do a summer-long study on leadership. And it was so much fun. And we had, it was Washington, D.C. provided such an environment to do that. But we would meet, they would give me one day a week. I took Tuesdays. And we would, the first thing we would do, when we would meet on Tuesday, we would discuss a Bible study that we worked up on biblical leadership, looking at different characters, you know, in the Bible, in terms of who leaders were. So that was leadership from the scriptures. And then I would set up an appointment with some well-known politician, newscaster, an ambassador, or whoever that I was had the opportunity to know, who were strong believers. And we would have lunch with them. And I would set it up by saying, like one of the guys you would know very well, I won't mention his names, but former colonel in the Marines and newscaster and so forth. But I would ask him to speak on what he's learned about the importance of courage as a leader. And with all of his military and political experience is, boy, he just would talk about how God had developed him over the decades in this area of the courageous leader. Mm-hmm. So that was, we had leadership from the scriptures, leadership from life, and then we would end it off by, after lunch, I would send them out into various places in Washington, D.C. For example, one of the places was the Holocaust Museum. And I'd say, okay, I want you to go to the Holocaust Museum. I want you to spend 2 hours. Take your time. Spend 2 hours going through the Holocaust Museum with this thought in mind, this question. What are the consequences of leadership misapplied? What happens when leaders get too much authority, power, and position? What can happen when that's misused? So those are just, I throw those out just as some ideas, mm-hmm. some things that, you know, the listeners can go to and try and even experiment with.
Yeah,
to learn some more on this.
Okay, well, as we wrap up our time together, tell us how we can get into your website and discover more of LDN.
Okay, the website is ldnglobal.com. And just go to it, and right at the beginning of it, you'll see download the ebook. You can just click on that, and you can get some podcast in there, and some other things they can get from there. We also do seminars, you know, around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have leaders who are trained at coaching in this model. So if you have some interest in that, we can give you some information on that as well.
Well, we'll put that in the show notes, and we'll make sure those folks have that information available. Thank you again, Terry, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what did you think? I'm sure you've learned something new that will hopefully challenge the way you view leadership and even your own personal development. I don't know about you, but this was a very encouraging time for me. Well, we hope you've enjoyed the rest of our conversation with Terry Cook and feel encouraged and equipped. If you want to hear more from Terry Cook and the LDN team, head over to www.ldnglobal.com, which includes their blog, resources, and a way to share this great insight with your team. And as always, for more on the Apprentice Approach, including other podcasts, episodes, resources, our blog, and to sign up for emails, visit our website, theapprenticeapproach.org. And if you haven't subscribed to the Apprentice Approach podcast in iTunes, do it today and pass it on to a friend. Until next time, this is your host, Jack McQuinney, believing God for generations of men and women like you.